In the 1980s, Barry Crimmins became known for his hard-hitting political stand-up comedy, for founding two successful Boston comedy clubs, and for his tireless peace activism. But all the while, he was haunted by memories of being raped as a young child. In the 1990s, he devoted himself to catching child pornographers by posing as one in online chat rooms hosted by AOL. Now, Bobcat Goldthwait, a comedian-turned-documentary filmmaker, has made a movie about Barry called Call Me Lucky. It opens a week from this Friday at the IFC Center in Greenwich Village. I'm very pleased that it brings Bobcat Goldthwait and Barry Crimmins to our show today. Hello.
Thank you for having us.
It brings Bobcat and his tattoos. I actually have a Barry tattoo. I forgot about that. Yeah,
you have one to honor Barry?
I have a tattoo of Barry. Yeah, we should say that Barry, in his movie, actually, this should play really well on the radio. But we should mention that he wasn't posing as a pedophile. He was just actually posing as a kid, and they would just...
What happened was someone told me about these rooms, and I went in. They instantly just started sending, presuming you were there for child pornography, they started sending me. So I went to AOL and said, what's going on here? And they played it dumb because they were, back in those days... You got 12 hours online, and that was $3 or $4 an hour to stay online. So they made a fortune off these people, and they played it dumb and kind of tried to string me out. And so I wanted to go to the authorities. I went to a lot of authorities, and they didn't. I mean, literally, cops didn't have computers and stuff. That it was amazing. So
in those days, because nowadays, I gather people go on those into anything similar, and they get caught immediately.
Well, I hope so, but I think they're. I wouldn't put anything there. I'm sure they put a lot of work into it. But at this point, they were talking about it as if it was free speech. You know, and as Andrew Vox said, you can mug somebody and call it performance art, but you're not going to get away with it. So anyway, I didn't pose as a kid so much as I just made a screen name up that said I was two kids, a girl and a boy. And when I went in, and immediately whatever they were fixated on, they would guess I was the girl or the boy. And then, oh, look, you can have fun. And they would send me this stuff, and eventually I turned it in. And eventually I ended up testifying in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee about it.
Now, Bobcat, you met Barry first because he's a comedian and you were a comedian?
And I met him at the comedians' union meeting.
Is there a comedians' union meeting?
Yeah. I was setting up coffee and cookies at the meeting. I met Barry as a teenager. I was 16 years old, and Tom Kenny, who's the voice of SpongeBob SquarePants and a couple other things, we met him because we were in Syracuse, New York. He was running a comedy night, and we saw this ad in the local paper, and we answered it, and we told him that we were professional comedians. We were just kids from high school.
And they came in, they were 7 years old. They were biting and, trenchant, funny, really good insight, good social satire.
He needed.
But they were also worried about prom dates, so they were very dear.
And he.
Were you already doing the kind of comedy that we associated with you as a grown up?
I was doing my act was always different. I don't know. It's probably doing props and anything.
They were doing stuff together and separately. So it was. They were pretty great right from the jump. They really were. And then I went to Boston and Bob. Followed me there. And
I followed Barry there, and
Tommy did eventually too.
Yeah, but my act has always been changing over the years. You know, I think folks that are familiar with me often think I'm dead. No, I think people are familiar.
They think you're a filmmaker now.
Not really. I mean, my movies make hundreds of dollars. You know, it's not. I'm not that well known.
I'm going to get a cut.
That has to scare you, Barry.
Yeah.
Well, why? You mean, what is he going to do with all that money?
You want more exposure here, don't you?
Yeah, he can keep a secret.
Bobcat, several comedians you interviewed for Call Me Lucky said that they could tell something was troubling Barry back in the 80s. What did they say led them to think that way?
Well, I think I don't know if they knew something was troubling him as much as they were, Barry had a very gruff exterior and could fly off the handle and things like that. Some people, because he's a hard drinker, would wanted to just, you know, say that he was. Well, you're a hard drinker.
Well, Mark Twain said, "When the others drink, I like to help."
Yeah,
if
but
you
I'm
leave
not
me at home,
but
home
I'm,
alone.
But I mean, I'm about
not
to make a point saying that you know guys were saying this, and I would defend you and say he's not an alcoholic, because there was guys who would say you're an alcoholic, and I would say you weren't. There was clearly something troubling you.
But you were doing a pretty much political comedy, influenced by, I assume, people like Lenny Bruce and George Carlin and Abbie Hoffman.
And I did some work with Abbie and really Twain. Twain was my big hero.
Mark Twain, he helped you?
He really did. I like to read his stuff. You know, I got a hold of his notebooks. I mean, not his literal notebooks, but they published them. I think they were ever published once, and I got a hold of them. And it taught me what I took from it is play to the age is not the age. I thought about people. I looked at this stuff and go, this guy looks great, and it's 150. And like, this guy looks tremendous, and it's 130 years later, or whatever it was, 120 years at that point. And then I just said, play to the ages, not the age. When I do material or whatever, I honestly sort of think, what will this look like in 100 years? And it's a pretty good way to keep yourself honest and, you know, get the big picture.
Were you changing the act every night in response to what was going on?
Yeah, always.
Kind of like what Mort Saul did.
Yeah, exactly.
Only yours was a little harder biting, I would think.
Well, Mort does what he does, and Mort kept me from being able to bring a newspaper on the stage. Damn him!
Because everybody said, "Oh, he's just doing Mort Saul."
Yeah, doing Mort Saul. It's a new newspaper, but
But then what?
And Mort did the timer thing too, right?
Then one evening, you revealed to an audience that you'd been molested. What happened that evening that finally compelled you to disclose what had happened?
Well, that happened. Well, first off, I sort of always knew and never knew. My sister, I was really kind of hitting the emotional wall, and my sister kept saying, I've got to talk to you. And, you know, as I say, I always knew, I never knew. I had this picture of her in my head being caught on the stairwell out of the basement by this babysitter by the foot. And when she talked, the footage rolled, and I'd been getting raped by the babysitter's mother's boyfriend or some association that wouldn't have been, you know, and mentioned that much in the late 50s. And so, I'm sorry, the compartmentalized memory kicks in.
Yeah, well, so there you were, all of this was happening, and you go out to do a comedy routine,
but it wasn't just a comedy. It was right after the Rodney King insurrection in L.A., and a lot of people were saying a lot of judgmental things about these kids in Los Angeles. And so I just decided, listen, you know, people are always ready to prosecute children as adults, and these kids got to learn, and whatever, and, you know, like, well, why are they behaving this way? Well, there's a lot of reasons kids do stuff. And in my case, here's what happened, you know. And that's when I began to learn things like this. People behave in a certain way or whatever. You can't figure them out. They seem nutty, or if you figure out where they're coming from, sometimes what seems insane is actually ingenious.
Well, you were raped in the basement.
Yeah.
It must have been weird living in the same house that you were abused. And did you tell your parents? Did they go to the police?
I was 4 years old. I didn't have a lot of – and plus I was pretty well put into – I mean, it's trauma. You know, I've learned a lot about trauma over the years.
But you went into therapy.
Well, years later. You know why I went into therapy? To please other people. Because I would be telling my people about it, and they would say, are you talking to anybody? And I'd say, yeah, I thought I was talking to you. But apparently I have to pay this guy $150 an hour to talk about it. So I did. But basically the greatest therapy I had was trying to work on behalf of contemporary children and to assist other people that had a similar background to mine. Because when you're helping those people and you're working in those things, you can see people at a point you were at, and you're realizing the progress you've made. And so you're not wallowing, you're moving forward.
But, Bob, a lot of people have talked about how comedians are doing a kind of therapy as well when they're doing certain kinds of routines. Not the one-liner guys, but the people who do things that grow out of their personal experiences or out of what's going on in the world. Do you see stand-up as a kind of a therapy?
No.
Okay.
Well, just the same as a painter or a you know, a musician or whatever, a writer. I mean, you, it's a way to express yourself. Or someone who's leaning on the horn in traffic, you know, like as if the traffic's completely based around them.
Now, when you were on AOL, did you catch many sexual predators?
I turned in a lot of people that were trading child pornography. And I know one in particular that was put away before they were going to do it all at once. But this one guy was so bad, he said to me, he thought I was a little boy, and he said, I want you to take your underpants and pee on them and put them in. You know what a Ziploc bag is? And I said, oh, yeah. Put them in a Ziploc bag and mail them to me. I said, oh, please, give me your address. And he did. And then they found out that guy was a multiple offender and whatever. I know that guy got put away right away. I never got the details on the rest, but I turned in a lot of evidence. And that evidence was all I didn't solicit it. It just kept coming to me. You know, I mean, if you went into those rooms in those days, they just presumed you wanted child pornography.
How long before AOL shut down the chat rooms?
Well, they shut down the chat rooms pretty much right after I testified in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee about it. But it was also at a time when they went from this fee for every extra hour over 12 or 15 or whatever it was, $3 or $4 an hour. When they had to compete, they went to a flat, you know, month like 1995 or something a month. And so at that point, it behooved them to clean this stuff up.
Now, Bob, the film is also about being a comic, and there's a lot of funny lines in it. What about you as a developing comic? Was Barry an influence on you?
Yeah, Barry's an influence on me. He was one of the guys when I got started that, you know, I looked up to.
You, people remember you from movies that you've done as well. 20 years ago, you were known for your spastic character, Zed, in the Police Academy movies, and also a kind of a character that you created for your onstage persona. Do you think you'll ever play somebody like Zed again?
I hope so.
Are you still doing stand-up?
Yeah, I do it occasionally.
But only occasionally?
Yeah.
What happened?
I like telling stories by making movies. And then I work with other comedians and I direct their stuff.
The two of you talk a bit about how you think show business isn't what it used to be. What's gone wrong today? Aren't there some pretty good comics today?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of great ones. I work with a lot of them. I direct on Marc Maron's show. I worked on Chappelle's show. I direct on, I just directed Brian Posehn's thing and his special. And so, yeah, I work with a lot of comedians. I think there's a lot of funny people out there.
Well, Chappelle, of course, shocked people when he dropped out for a time. Is this a tough life?
I don't think it's any tougher than most people's life. I think the human condition is pretty rough. I just think comedians, you know, we get a little more spotlight.
Barry, in putting together an act, you couldn't bring the newspaper out. But in the end, when you read a newspaper, are you seeing funny lines just occurring to you, though it's about something that is really... other people might be very upset about?
I'm not urgently looking for material because there's so much of it. And the main thing about putting together an act is finding the sequence to do it in for the kind of stuff. Because if you reveal the wrong issue too soon or whatever, you can lose 20 minutes of material later on. So it really has to do with just the sequencing of material. That's why almost every time I do a show, I spend a lot more time preparing the show than I do doing it. When I was young... Even though Bob was younger than me, I looked up to him as a comic because he was just instantly this genius performer.
Are jokes about Donald Trump too easy?
I think that, you know, if you got a line or two, do it, but you dispose of him because it's really a distraction. You want to get on to something that matters. People always want to talk about, did you see what Rush Limbaugh said today? No, of course not. I figured out who he was 25 years ago. I got other things to do. We should be talking about this or that. So the thing is, you know, you might have a line or two about something that transitions into something that's more significant.
Why did you call the film Call Me Lucky, Bob?
Oh, well, it's in the movie. Barry says it.
And that's as far as you're going to go? Okay.
Well,
because you could have had a bigger career. Do you think that you're lucky?
That's certainly an understatement. But,
well, considering the respect that comics had for you and the love that many audiences express for you.
Yeah, well, you know, I feel bigger career, that's an interesting, but I mean, I feel very fortunate I've been able to get up and do what I think I should do every day for a long time. And I got to work with like these great comics who are my friends, and also people like Howard Zinn and Chomsky and stuff. And, you know, in the movie, you see me standing there next to Maya Angelou. So I wouldn't have gotten some of that stuff if I had been slightly more mainstream and more of a household name, maybe. But, you know, there's a balance, and I feel very fortunate. But the Call Me Lucky thing is just basically, who knows if I'd been raped a few more times as a kid. Maybe that I would have crossed some line and become a perpetrator, and instead I became a human rights activist.
Because many people who are abused wind up having to
work it out in their
personal lives.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Well, you know, sure, in their personal lives, yeah, most don't become perpetrators, though. But, you know, I would say most perpetrators were abused.
Hmm. Well, the film opens a week from this Friday. It was at Sundance originally?
Yeah, it's been at Sundance, and it's been at a number of festivals all around the country.
Gotten great
honors at
so
seven festivals. And it's Bob's third film at Sundance. He's really humble and remarkable story. But I mean, and to have him focus his great talent and his incredible crew of people who are thrilled to work with him, it's just what a great honor, and call me lucky.
And I thank both of you for being on our show. Barry Crimmins, the subject of Bobcat Goldthwait's new film, his latest film, Call Me Lucky, which opens a week from this Friday at the IFC Center in Greenwich Village.